Hey, everybody. Thanks for being back with us on this Tuesday as we continue through the book of Jonah. We are at the end of chapter one. We left verse here that is in some ways the signature verse, at least if there's a thing that people know about the character Jonah and therefore the book of Jonah, it's got to be this part. So let me just read this one verse, verse 17, then we'll stop and we'll move forward from there. But the Lord provided large fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Just if you've been with us in the study, you've heard us make the case that the word great is important. And just so I want to be clear that when the Lord provides, in my translation, it says large. It's great. A great fish. So that use of that word continues. And interestingly, Michael, I think in the context of the story, this is not a particularly important detail.
Right.
Right. It gets one verse.
Correct.
Narratively, it is a transition. What happens now is that Jonah is in the sea. Mm-hmm. Now Jonah is going to be in a protected place, and that mechanism is going to deliver him to the place he was supposed to go in the first place. And yet, no detail of the story has been maybe more controversial or more studied or more argued than this verse. What we make of this idea. I've literally heard people engage in arguments, whether this is fish or whale.
Yep.
And in Hebrew, it's the word fish. There is a word for whale. It's not used here. It says great fish. But Jonah's not arguing North American scientific classification of ocean life, right? I mean, we make such a big deal of this, which is fascinating because it's really such a little deal in the context of the story. It's really interesting how much we've dug in on this particular place, I think, historically.
Another way to frame that, another way to spin it, and this just makes me smile, Clint, is that we're going to have many, many people who were blessed to have joined us over the course of a study like this. They're going to find a particular passage that's interesting to them, or they're going to be scanning through YouTube and a video is going to come up. But I think, Clint, the really funny thing is, this is pretty much the only study that in the course of this book, people have likely given any thought to or are likely to know the details of. But throughout the rest of this story, lots of people don't know about the plant at the end of Jonah. Lots of people don't know about the thing that Jonah says in the city of Nineveh and his disappointment at what happens there.
Or this psalm that's about to come.
Right. But even more that don't know the psalm that's about to come. And I just think what's amazing about this particular text, and here we're looking at just a razor-thin, slim amount of words here, this idea that the Lord, the God of Israel, once again, calls a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And this is not the thing itself, though we have, in our imaginations, allowed this to be the thing that dominates in the children's Bible and in our telling of the story that, hey, fish or whale. No, actually, the thing that comes up after this is Jonah is in the belly of the fish for a determined amount of time, 3 days and three nights. And when you have things like that in Scripture, when the details of dates and times are included, you need to understand it's not just giving us a quantitative understanding. It's teaching something. And as it turns out, in ancient Israelite culture, this time frame, 3 days and three nights, is the amount of time it takes to get to the realm of the dead. It's the amount of time it takes to get from the living to the other side of living. And so here you have Jonah being swallowed in the water by a vessel, a creature, capable of then taking him to the very deepest part of the water, continuing this trend of going down, 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 down. Now he's going to go down to the farthest place imaginable, both literally in the water and then spiritually in death. And the idea is that Jonah's been willing to go the whole way. He's willing to test the limit of how far God will be. And this is the mechanism that the story is using. It's the way that it's being told to help us understand that that's the furthest extent possible. But to your point, Clint, the biblical author has no interest in telling us it's the spotted Mediterranean, whatever fish. That's not the point of this. The point isn't the scientific classification. It's the spiritual meaning of what's happening to Jonah.
In fact, so disinterested is the author in this, and we don't see this in English, but the word fish is used three times here in this verse, and then once in the psalm or before the psalm, and once when the fish spits Jonah out. Two of those words are male. It would describe a male fish. And the third is female. The author changes the gender of the word. And that has more to do with the poetry that we'll talk about in today and tomorrow. But the writing itself, even further than we can see in English, detracts from the idea that it's about that thing. That thing is just a thing that God uses. And so the great fish, the whale, we'll probably call it both, swallows Jonah 3 days, three nights. And we'll get there in a minute, Michael, but I want to preface something you said, preface by going to something you said. The idea of being swallowed up by death. You know, we in the New Testament, we see Jesus say something about the sign of Jonah. It's not simply the 3 days that is the sign. It's the idea of being delivered from death to life. And that's really the kind of meaning that overhangs this next part of the story. So with that kind of lengthy introduction, we move into chapter 2. And chapter 2 stands out in Jonah as unique. It is a chapter entirely devoted to what we would call a psalm, a prayer. It uses different words. It's of a different style, substance. Some have suggested it was added later or came from an outside source. I don't know that there's a reason to make that case here. Those arguments are out there if you want to see them. It fits beautifully within Jonah. So however it got there, it is an incredible passage. And I think in its own way, maybe the most beautiful part of the story, but ironically, by far the least known part of the story.
I think the argument you would make against this, at least initially, would be that it's such a different tone and it's a different way of presenting the story that is a kind of shift that we don't often see in the biblical writings. We have a book related to Psalms. We have a book related to the prophetic stories. Those books don't get interwoven. But here we just see in an instant that transition happens and now suddenly we're thrust into Psalms. So I think it's the diversity of that may strike us as odd. But Clint, as we're about to jump into this, I just as a word of advice as we come into this, if you look at this and look in this for what this has to teach us about, first of all, Jonah's relationship to God, and then ultimately you hold over this story asking, what is Jonah actually saying? Not just what is his prayer, but what is his actual actions pointing us towards? This psalm does something that just a simple narration couldn't do. It lets us into this divine conversation between Jonah and God, and it lets us wonder, is Jonah in fact finding this compelling move from God a thing that's going to change his life, or will he leave this experience and will he remain in some part of himself still arrogantly or stubbornly convicted that he needs to run the other way? And I think that this psalm does it in a way that we couldn't imagine any other way of writing it could do.
There's a timelessness to this because we're told in verse 1 here, Jonah prayed to the Lord, but then we don't really hear a prayer. We hear Jonah's account of praying until the very end. These words are less directed to God and more to the reader, or at least they're the encapsulation of Jonah's story. So let me read a few of these verses, then we'll come back and talk our way through them. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from the belly of the great fish, saying, I called to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. You cast me into the deep, the heart of the sea, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and billows passed over me. Then I said, I am driven from your sight. How shall I look again upon your holy temple? The waters closed in over me. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. At the roots of the mountains, I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord, my God. Maybe we could pause there, Michael. Thanks. So again, this beautiful expression of praise, it assumes, or at least it leads us to assume, that either in the water or on the way to the water, at some point in his sinking, Job cries out to God, or Jonah cries out to God. Jonah says as much, I called out to the Lord in my distress, and he answered me. And out of the belly of Sheol, and the word here is probably better translated womb. And Sheol, if you're not up on your obscure Old Testament words, which is not a problem, it means the place where the dead go. Sheol isn't what we would think of as heaven or hell. It's just the place of the dead. It's not associated with value. The righteous and the unrighteous are all there. It's simply, probably the simplest way to think of it, Michael, is just, it means dead. In the womb of death, I cried. In other words, as I was passing from life to death, I cried to the Lord, and you heard my voice. And this is the most we've heard Jonah say. It's the most intimate thing we've heard Jonah say. And it's the first time we've heard Jonah give anything that could really be constituted as praise.
It is, in some ways, a very sobering text, I think, Clint, because when you look at this closely, it is unbelievably dark. If you read this idea that in distress, in the depth of darkness, even in death itself, being cast into the deep, the very heart of the sea, the flood surrounds, billows and waves are passing over. In this very, it's not poetic in a Western sense, but it's poetic in that it is casting all of these different perspectives and angles upon Jonah's experience. And what we're seeing so very clearly here is that Jonah is experiencing separation from God, being sent to that place where one continually goes down and down and down and down, farther and farther and farther. And yet, this idea that as this is closing upon me forever, we have here in verse 6, we have at the end of that, you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. It's a statement of faith, but it's wrapped in a moment that is full of seaweed. It's a moment of profession, but yet in the midst of that profession is the confession of reality. Jonah is in the most God-forsaken state, and yet able to claim and name and see God's place in it. And part of what makes this so sobering and dark for me, Clint, is the fact that Jonah has put himself here. It's not that God sought out Jonah's ill. It's that Jonah's stubbornness and inability or unwillingness to allow God to move him to complete his chosen task in Nineveh, Jonah has chosen a path at the bottom of the belly of the boat that's now led him to the throes of the bottom of the sea. And at the bottom of this place of his life experience, it's here that he can make this claim in verse 6 that God has brought him up from the pit. I mean, that is both a compelling statement of faith, but it's also, if we're going to be honest, I think a very sobering reflection of someone whose choices have put them in this position in an adversarial conflict with God.
We've tried to make the case that the word down is important throughout chapter one. You know, he goes down into the ship, he goes down to the port, now he goes down in the sea, and here we have the ultimate culmination of that. I went down to Sheol, went down to the depth, went down to death. And the spiritual lesson here, I think, is subtle but profound. Jonah is fleeing the presence of God. And where does fleeing the presence of God lead in the context of the book? It leads to death. It leads away from life. It leads to that place where one is covered and one is hopeless and the water closes in and the seaweeds were wrapped around my head and I was at the root of the mountain, the land whose bars closed upon me. It's unfortunate that this psalm is not also in the book of Psalms, because this is one of the more beautiful kind of Lent and personal suffering psalms, and then turns to a wonderful praise psalm. I'm not saying this as truth. In my opinion, this is as beautiful as nearly anything in the book of Psalms, and yet it is largely unknown because of its kind of obscure place in this strange story. But it is a wonderful rock hold. It is a wonderful handhold for anybody who finds themselves in that moment of, I just feel like I'm sinking. I feel like I'm drifting, like I'm at the bottom and headed down to the very depths. We join Jonah there. And I think in many ways, we can come back to this at the end of the study, but I think I'd make the case, Michael, that this is the most human portrait we see of Jonah in the book. I actually think this is Jonah at his very best, is when he's in the belly of the fish. I wish that it was going to stay on that high note, but I actually don't think it does. I think the story goes a different way. But this is extremely beautiful poetry.
I don't know if you would agree with this, Clint, but I think that this moment both has gotten more attention than it deserves and less attention than it deserves. We've given it more attention because we've become obsessed with the mechanics of the fish and the whale and the swallowing and the how long can one be alive and how is he not digested yet. We've been fixated in these technical components of the story. And when we do that, we make ourselves uninterested in what is, I think, an underappreciated aspect of this story. And that is what we do with the reality of human suffering, that we admit the honest truth that we discover in our lives moments, sometimes even seasons, in which the darkness overwhelms us, in which it feels like we continually sink lower and lower and lower. And in that moment, we're missing this moment, this opportunity that we have in the life of Jonah to see someone who's gotten there for good and even more so bad reasons, and is having this conversational encounter with God, and come back tomorrow because the conversation is going to take a very different turn from what we've had here today. But up to this point, confesses the reality of the darkness and the struggle and the forebodingness of human life. We've experienced that, and it's now being told through Jonah's story. So then the question is, how does God work even amidst this situation? And what implication might have that have for you and for me, the readers of this story, also finding faith in the midst of the difficulty of life? All of that is written into this story. When you overfocus on the technicality of a fish, you're going to miss it. When you underemphasize the importance of these words of God and God's presence in dark places, then you're going to miss it. So I would encourage you, spend some time here. Appreciate these words, because there's a depth of wisdom in there that you will miss if you fail to do so.
Yeah, I think my take on what you're saying, Michael, is maybe that we've been so obsessed with trying to explain this text that we've not encountered it, that we've not actually listened to the words of a man whose flight from God has led him to the depths, and who now cries out to the very God he was running from, which, right, this is also humanity 101. We have no interest in God when God asks us to do something we don't want to do, but when we're drowning and need him, we inevitably call out for him. And Jonah is certainly no exception to that. Jonah is the epitome of that. But I think that's something we all do. I don't want to demonize Jonah. I think Jonah is very much a part that all of us carry around, a person in whom we find ourselves at some level. And so a very interesting part of the story. If you've never slowly read through the second chapter of Jonah, I hope you'll take the time to do it, because it is staggeringly beautiful, and it is deeply profound, and it is so much more important than fish or whale and how and when. And the text is Jonah from the belly of the great fish in the depths of Sheol certainly doesn't care what the answer to those questions are. He wonders, where is God, and will I emerge? Is this the end? And so if you've never done that, if you've never read through it, I would encourage you to try it, because I think you'll find that it is surprisingly good.
And chapter 2's not over yet. So no, we hope that you'll join us for that conversation tomorrow. The best way to do that is to subscribe. If you want to get instant notifications when these come out on YouTube, you can hit that little bell icon after you subscribe. That helps you get notice of those. But certainly like the video if you found this helpful. If you've made it this far, hope that you might share it with someone else who it would bless them. And we would love to see as we continue on through the second chapter of Jonah tomorrow.
Thanks, everybody.